The Skylark Bell, an award-winning serial fiction podcast by Melissa Oliveri, now in its third season. Follow Magpie and Lucas from small-town America to a remote Scottish island as they attempt to solve the mystery of the mythical Skylark Bell. This podcast is for lovers of ghost stories, time travel, Celtic lore, the unexplained, and the supernatural. Find The Skylark Bell on your preferred podcast platform and at theskylarkbell.com.
What's up, witches?
Hi, I'm Claudia.
And I'm Jess.
And welcome to
True Crime Coven.
So, how are you, Jess?
Yeah, I'm good. Tired, but...
Getting through January.
Yeah, getting through January. It's very cold, very dark. Orla's been ill, but she's
very
getting
January.
Better. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, she had tonsillitis.
Oh dear, hopefully that's not a start of a cycle.
No, I think it was viral rather than bacterial, so.
Hopefully.
Mm.
Well, this week we are bringing you a case that, well, kind of fits with that a little bit.
Is it all about tonsillitis? The tonsils did it.
No, but you might have given Orla. Yeah, the tonsils did it. They always did it.
It's always been the tonsils.
But you might have given all a cowpole.
Yeah.
And what does cowpole contain?
Paracetamol.
Exactly.
Oh, I thought I got it wrong then. I was like, is this a test? Is it pass or fail? Getting hot under the collar.
You pass.
Thank you. I do know something.
So, yeah, something.
One thing. That's all I know.
So I guess with that little segue... I will just jump right in.
Yeah, go for it.
So this week, I'm bringing a case that kind of strikes terror into me a bit. Oh. And when I've been asked what true crime case scares you the most, I often answer either the one we're going to cover today, or I say BTK, which we've mentioned in passing before, but basically a thing that scares me about BTK murders is that the killer, Dennis Rader, used to hide in his victims' homes for hours waiting for them.
Yeah.
Which is like a bit of a, you know, bogeyman fear, I feel. Or yeah. Like definitely a woman fear.
Yeah. I mean, have you ever seen Luther?
No.
Oh, there's an episode of that where there's a killer and he hides under a woman's bed and it is the scariest. Like, scarier than any horror film I've ever watched.
That is literally something Dennis Rader did.
Yeah. It's terrifying.
And so that is scary to me.
Yeah.
But this case doesn't scare me because of the brutality or the creepiness. In essence, there's no boogeyman hiding in the shadows as such. But instead, this story centres around something so benign and everyday, and I think that's why it scares me. Hmm. So today, we are going to discuss the Chicago Tylenol murders. And Jess, have you heard of this case?
No, I haven't.
So, for all our non-American listeners, which includes us.
Yeah.
well, we're not listeners, but you know what I mean.
Sometimes.
Tylenol is what we call paracetamol. So, paracetamol is our brand name.
Okay.
I was going to say, I've
heard Tylenol in, like, American TV shows.
Mm. So, it is literally our paracetamol.
Okay.
Which we all know is common use. It's used as analgesia and an antipyretic. Mm. So basically, for people who don't know what antipyretic means, it brings down your temperature, and then obviously analgesia helps your pain. We all know that. It's a bit of a wonder drug. A lot of people say it does nothing. It's actually a really fucking great drug.
It really is.
As a nurse, I bloody love it.
Yeah. I think people think, like, you use it and 10 minutes later expect to have no headache, but it's like, okay, no, you have to keep your dosage up.
Yeah, and honestly, paracetamol, bread and butter, love it.
Mm-hmm.
So as you might have guessed, our story takes place today in Chicago, hence being the Chicago Tylenol murders.
Yeah.
But it kind of doesn't take place in Chicago. It takes place in and around Chicago.
Okay.
Which is the third most populated city in the United States.
Oh.
Which kind of surprised me.
Yeah.
I annoyingly didn't look at what the first was, but I imagine it's New York.
Yeah. yeah. My geography of the UK is not great, but my geography of the US is even worse. So I couldn't tell
you. And Simon can attest to this, both of our geography knowledge.
It's terrible.
So, it was on Wednesday, September 29th, 1982, at 6:15 a.m., that 12-year-old Mary Kellerman took one Tylenol capsule at her family home in Elk Grove Village. She took the painkiller after she woke up complaining of a sore throat and a runny nose. Normal cold-like symptoms. However, this medicine would not cure her ailments, as just over 3 hours later, at 9:56 a.m, Mary was pronounced dead. She was taken to Alexei and Brothers Medical Center, and unfortunately, their efforts to revive her just didn't work.
Wow.
Now, I couldn't find much about what happened to Mary after taking the Tylenol tablet. Most sources just state that she collapsed. Okay. But I will discuss a bit later the type of symptoms that Mary might have experienced. I do also know that her mother was at work when Mary collapsed. She got the phone call and drove home, but she got there as soon as Mary was actually being put into the back of an ambulance, and they wouldn't let her see her.
Oh, that's horrible.
Presumably because she was so unwell, it would be too distressing.
Yeah.
Mary's death was shocking and devastating to her parents, Dennis and Gianna Kellerman. She was their only child, and so naturally, they completely doted on her.
Mm.
She was said to be warm and loving by her friend, Sharon Hogg. This can also be shown by the fact that she handmade a vase for one of her teachers as a gift, something the teacher would go on to treasure for decades. Mary enjoyed many hobbies, such as pottery, but also cooking with her mum, learning the guitar, practicing gymnastics, something Jess loves.
I do.
Riding her pony and playing video games with her dad on their Atari games console. She also loved animals, especially her pets, her pony, her three dogs, and her goldfish. But why did this bright and curious 12-year-old girl suddenly die? She had started her day under the weather, sure, but who hasn't woken up with a sore throat and a runny nose before?
Mm.
These are things that we rarely expect to kill anyone, let alone a perfectly healthy preteen with a zest for life. Well, answers would come, but unfortunately, more deaths would have to occur first. 27-year-old Arlington Heights resident Adam Janus was rushed to hospital at 2:33 p.m. on September 29th, 1982, with a suspected heart attack. He had walked out of the family bathroom clutching his chest and complaining of pain after taking two Tylenol capsules. Adam's wife, Teresa, followed her husband into their bedroom, where she saw his breathing began to grow shallower, whilst his pupils became fixed and dilated. Teresa noticed that one of her neighbours, who happened to be a nurse, was actually stood outside her house, talking with a friend, so she ran to grab the woman. The nurse began trying to resuscitate Adam, whilst her friend called for an ambulance. Adam was rushed to hospital, where Dr. Thomas Kim, the medical director of ICU, was waiting. He too tried to revive Adam, but all attempts were unsuccessful. Adam Janus was pronounced dead at 3:15 p.m. Dr. Kim was baffled. Why had this 27-year-old man suddenly collapsed and died? The medics could only assume a massive heart attack or injury to the brain, but they'd have to wait for their test results to come back. Adam Janus was said to be a doting father of two, who worked as a postal supervisor and enjoyed fixing clocks in his spare time. His wife, Teresa Janus, stated that he was always happy with both his job and his family life. And also, just a little note, obviously Dr. Kim is like baffled and he's saying, well, it must be a massive heart attack. But even that is odd.
Yeah.
27-year-olds don't tend to have a massive heart attack.
Like, he's fit and well. I mean, I know it's like, it has happened and nothing is impossible. But I feel like if that happens, like, and when it has happened, people have known pretty quickly, like, yes, it was definitely a heart attack, like...
Well, yeah, and when it's happened, you know, for example, I'm thinking of footballers on a pitch, you know, having heart attacks and stuff. When that something like that's happened, they've been doing physical activity.
Yeah, not just coming out the bathroom,
yeah,
like, early morning or they also, like, obviously the survival rate for a heart attack is quite low, and it is actually very hard to revive someone, and they're like, especially with like no lasting issues, but the people who tend to be in that small percentage are the younger, fitter, healthier people. So you'd think, yeah, like, healthcare, well, professionals would be able to do something.
Well, to be honest with you, I would say that heart attack survival rates are actually higher than you'd think, because most, you know, having seen a lot of heart attacks, most of them aren't clutching your chest, dropping to the floor. A lot of them are, I've got chest pain.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I've seen doctors having to convince a man that he's actually having a heart attack, and he was like, are you sure it's not nerve pain? And they're like, no, you are having a heart attack.
Yeah. So it seems like, it seems like more surprising that it would be a fatal heart attack.
Yeah. In this, and just out of nowhere. But Adam would not be the last person to die suddenly and mysteriously. And even more sadly, nor would he be the only person in his family to die either. Oh. However, next it would be Mary Lynn Rayner, who would become deathly unwell. Lynn had just given birth to her and her husband Edwin's fourth child a week earlier, when she became comatose after taking at least one capsule of Tylenol at around 3:30 p.m. to treat a headache. She began feeling dizzy almost immediately. She started to make her way towards the bathroom, but she collapsed on the way to a kitchen chair, where she began having seizures. When help arrived, her pupils were fixed and dilated, and she continued to experience seizure as her husband looked on, along with her mother-in-law, who was holding her newborn baby. Upstairs, one of her school-aged children was yelling down, asking what was happening, and her husband was yelling back at them to stay upstairs. Lynn was taken straight to hospital, but sadly, the next day on September 30th, 1982, at 9:05 a.m, Lynn was taken off of life support and pronounced dead. She was said to be a great cook and devoted mum, and remember, she had literally given birth to her fourth child a week earlier.
Yeah.
She was also one of the victims in this case, who lived further away than the others. Not too far, but she lived 20 miles south of Arlington Heights in a place called Winfield. So the other two were in Arlington Heights so far.
Okay.
Which is a little way away from Chicago, but it's in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
So back in Arlington Heights, and back to September 29th, 1982. And I know we're jumping around a bit here, but I kind of had two options of how I could do this timeline. I thought I'd do it in order of when people got ill. So obviously some people don't die the same day.
Yeah.
So we do jump around a little bit, but
we
do keep going back to September 29th. So back in Arlington Heights, Adam Janus's younger brother Stanley is at his home. So this is just after his brother's death, and everyone had gathered to comfort each other. Stanley suffered of chronic back pain, and also, understandably, had a headache born of the day's grief. So at 5:40 p.m, he decided to try and relieve these with the extra strength Tylenol he found at Adam's home. Moments later, Stanley then clutched his chest, telling his family, "My God, I feel bad." He began to collapse, but was caught by a family member. An ambulance was called, and the paramedics and firefighters' ears pricked up as they heard the address. It was the same one they had visited just earlier that day, and for the same reason. And they knew how that had turned out. Stanley was rushed to the same hospital as Adam, but sadly was pronounced dead at 8:15 p.m. But Stanley wasn't the last unwell Janus of the day. His wife, 20-year-old Teresa Terry Janus, had also taken Tylenol when offered by her husband, as she too had a headache that just wouldn't budge. As Stanley began to collapse, Terry began to complain of chest pain. As firefighter Chuck Kramer was working on her husband, Terry called out to Stanley before groaning and falling to the floor. At first, Kramer assumed she had fainted, but when he turned her over, he realised something far more serious was going on. Her breathing was shallow, and her pupils were fixed and dilated. EMTs began working on Terry and rushed her to hospital as well. Terry would die 2 days later, on October 1st, 1982, at 1:15 p.m. Terry and Stanley had only just gotten married 3 months earlier, on June 19th, and they had been excited for their life together. They hadn't even seen the proof photos from their wedding photographer yet, and so would never get to see the beautiful images of Terry in her lace gown, beaming next to an equally as proud Stanley in his full tux.
That's so sad. Like, obviously all of them are really sad, but, like, just, it's when you hear things like that, you just realise, like, how young all these victims are and, like, how much of their life has just been torn away from them.
And I also think as well, it's so easy, especially when you're interested in true crime, to forget that these are real people. They're not stories. They're not, you know, fiction. This is real. And I think hearing things like that, like, oh yeah, before we heard about them, they had a whole wedding, which they planned for months.
And they were,
they would have talked probably about whether they wanted kids and where they wanted to live.
Yeah, they were starting a life together and, and then they had to...
And they never even got to see the pictures of their day that they planned
they
for
They also...
months.
Like, died grieving their brother and brother-in-law.
Yeah.
Like, and then and their family have lost, like, three members in one day.
Exactly. Like, and it's a painful death as well, you know. Yeah. You can hear that these people are in pain.
Yeah.
It's horrible. Now, this is three people of the same family being rushed to hospital with cardiac problems. Two young and seemingly healthy men in their 20s, and one healthy 20-year-old woman. Having worked in A&E, we are trained to look for odd patterns. So obviously, if three family members come in with COVID or norovirus, it's not such a red flag. Obviously, we'd look thoroughly to make sure it's norovirus, because
yeah,
make sure it's not something they ate. But, you know, people around other people.
Yeah, that's something. That's something contagious as well. Like, heart attacks don't tend to be contagious.
Yeah. So if, for example, multiple family members or people who have been in the same place come in with symptoms that aren't infectious, such as heart attacks, chest pain, we begin to be more suspicious. Now, of course, it is possible that Stanley Janus was suffering from shock after the death of his old brother, and then Terry Janus was in shock and then lost, you know, kind of the last straw when she saw her husband become ill. But Kramer stated that as he saw Terry Janus fall seriously unwell straight after her husband, he knew that this was not due to heart attacks and that something else was going on.
Yeah.
Kramer was so worried and so convinced of this that he placed the rest of the Janus family members into police cars and sent them to hospital too. Dr. Kim, upon hearing of the developments, stayed late to try and find out just what was going on. But these were not the last of the suspicious deaths. As 31-year-old Mary McFarland of Elmhurst, Illinois, would tell her colleagues that she felt dizzy after she had taken a Tylenol capsule. 2 minutes later, at 6:35 p.m, she would then collapse and paramedics would rush to the scene. Sadly, the divorced mother of two would be pronounced dead the next day at 3:18 a.m, with doctors declaring that she had suffered a catastrophic stroke. Her friends said that she had a wicked sense of humour and that she was lovely cool. And that she was lovingly called Mary Sue or Mary Mac by those that knew her well. Her sons were aged only 2 and 4 at the time of her death and were reportedly everything to her.
Oh, you can imagine, can't you?
Yeah.
Like.
The final death will take us east to Chicago, where a woman named Paula Prince was buying a bottle of 24 extra strength Tylenol at Walgreens at around 9:16 p.m. She then took the Tylenol when she arrived at her apartment 15 minutes later. 2 days later, on October 1st, 5:40 p.m, Paula's lifeless body was discovered and she was pronounced dead at 6:45 p.m. She was remembered by friends for her love of travel and adventure, which was reflected in her career as a flight attendant. She had been excited to meet up with her friend, Jean Regula Leavengood, and so left her a note stating that she had exciting news to tell her. At her funeral, a man approached Jean and introduced himself, stating that he had met Paula during a layover in Las Vegas, where the two had fallen madly and deeply in love, and they had planned to get married.
Aww.
This was the exciting news that Paula had never gotten to tell her close friend.
Oh, that's so sad.
So now we have 7 deaths, all of young, healthy people. Mm. So just to recap, we have 12-year-old Mary Kellerman, 27-year-old Adam Janus, 27-year-old Mary Lynn Rayner, 25-year-old Stanley Janus, 20-year-old Teresa Terry Janus, 31-year-old Mary McFarland, and 35-year-old Paula Prince. It's so rare for people this young to die of heart problems when they have no underlying conditions.
Yeah.
So the pattern might have gone unrecognised if 3 of the victims hadn't all been from one family. Now, obviously, I can't imagine the devastation of losing three family members at once, and I hope I never have to feel that.
Yeah.
But without this absolute tragedy, there may well have been so many more deaths.
And of course, whilst just thinking that, like, imagine how long this could have gone on for.
Honestly, it could have been
hundreds.
I don't want to say so much worse, because that seems like I'm really belittling the deaths that have occurred.
Yeah, but it could have been hundreds before it was noticed.
And of course, this is probably little comfort to the Janus family, but I honestly feel that so many lives are owed to what happened to their family.
Yeah, definitely.
And if there is anything that they can take comfort in, I just hope it's in that, you know.
Yeah, they could have saved lives.
Yeah. Because you see, after the sudden illnesses of three of the Janus members, Kramer, so that's the police, the firefighter.
Mm-hmm.
Kramer knew that he needed to call a public health expert, and he only had one person in mind, Nurse Helen Jensen. She was asked to investigate the deaths on September 29th, 1982. So at this point, Terry was still alive, but obviously she's seriously unwell.
Yeah.
As were Lynn and Paula. So sorry to jump around again, but he obviously called her after he had seen the three people become unwell. So Terry is still alive, but she's on life support.
Yeah.
And the prognosis is not good.
Okay.
So, the night of September 29th, Kramer called Nurse Jensen and he filled her in on what had happened to the three young and healthy members of the Janus family and told her that he needed her help to get to the bottom of the true cause. Nurse Jensen arrived at the hospital just 15 minutes after Kramer's call and walked straight into where the Janus family were quarantined. And I think everyone was like really surprised. They're like, oh my God, she's going in there. But she was just like a no-nonsense nurse.
Yeah.
And just,
I'm here to get shit done.
So she walked straight in, and through the use of an interpreter, so the Janus family were Polish, and I really apologise if it's, like, pronounced Janus or Janus, but they were Polish. For the use of the interpreter, Nurse Jensen spoke to Adam's widow, Teresa, and asked all about how Adam's mourning had been and what had happened at her house after his death. It was during this conversation that Nurse Jensen realised that all three of the unwell Januses had taken Tylenol, and she found herself wondering if this could be the missing link. So Nurse Jensen rushed over to Adam and Teresa's home, where she located the bottle of Tylenol, as well as the receipt, in their bin. But, being a good nurse, she made sure she wasn't putting all her eggs in one basket, so she gathered other items that she thought could be responsible for the illnesses. She gathered a pot of black coffee, used coffee grounds, home jarred fruits, pound cake, other prescription medications, and even fresh flowers. Following her gut, however, Jensen poured the contents of the Tylenol bottle out and counted them. It was a 50-count bottle, which according to the receipt had been bought that very day on September 29th, and Jensen could only count 44 capsules. The maths was simple. Tylenol comes in 500mg capsules, like paracetamol does.
Yeah.
The dosage is 1 gram, aka 2 capsules. So if 6 capsules missing, it would track that all three of the Januses had taken Tylenol before falling fatally unwell and would have taken the medication from this one bottle. She took her findings, along with the bottle of Tylenol, to the Cook County Medical Examiner's office. However, she was immediately met with scepticism. Frustrated, Jensen knew that this was because she was a woman and a nurse, and that night she cried herself to sleep, telling her husband that she knew lives were potentially still at risk, but that no one was going to listen to her. And I think in the 80s, this is probably the case.
Yeah.
I mean, nurses aren't always that well respected now. Trust me, as someone who's been told time and time again, you're just a nurse, or so you're not clever enough to be a doctor then.
No,
I don't want to be a doctor, and I am not just a nurse. I'm a badass nurse. Yeah, being a woman in the 80s. It's not easy now, but
no,
in the
it's
80s.
Not. Yeah.
And I always think the 80s is 20 years ago, and I'm remembering it's 40 and I'm sad.
Yeah, we old. Yeah, there's definitely a lack of, like, I know for the time, but there is a lack of respect for nurses as a profession in general and just women. Women? And women in general.
Yeah. Exactly. So she just knew that people weren't listening to her, that they were like, What does this woman know? What does this woman nurse know?
Yeah, that's really...
She's not clever enough to be a doctor.
Yeah, really sad that she cried herself to sleep, though. Bless her.
She really cared.
Yeah.
Well, meanwhile, back at the hospital of the Januses, Dr. Kim was telling Kramer how Stanley had just been pronounced dead, whilst his wife Terry was on life support with a very poor prognosis. And interestingly, Dr. Kim stated that he didn't think that the cause was something environmental. Instead, he felt it was something the trio had ingested, and so he was desperately chasing a poison expert to try and help him find the root. After a tiring and bizarre day, Kramer headed home, where he received a call from his friend and fire lieutenant, Phil Capitelli, asking if the day's events would be resulting in the closure of the fire station. You know, because obviously so many people had been potentially exposed.
Yeah.
Like, people were scared. They were like, people have been collapsing and dying.
Yeah.
And we've been around them.
Yeah, you would
And I don't know how much PPE would have been a thing that was forefront back then.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I feel like it's only become more forefront since COVID as well.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
So Kramer began to relay all that had happened to the lieutenant, including how he had overheard Teresa Janus tell Nurse Jensen that all three of the victims had taken Tylenol that day before falling unwell. This stood out to Phil immediately. You see, he had heard about 12-year-old Mary Kellerman's sudden death earlier that day, as his mother-in-law worked with Mary's mother. And so he had called his friend Richard Keyworth, who worked at Elk Grove Village Fire Department, who had attended her 911 call, to ask about what had happened. So this was like just over a decade before privacy laws. So whereas now, if I called another hospital and was like, yo, what happened? They'd be like,
can't tell you.
You are so unethical and in fact we're reporting you.
Yeah.
This was okay. And also I feel like because he wasn't coming from a bad place. I don't think he wanted to know the gossip. I think he was genuinely like, oh my God, a 12-year-old's dropped dead in my village. It was a village where she lived as well.
Yeah. Also, like, not that it makes it okay, but like if he knew people who knew her,
yeah, like it's still unethical to ask, but it's understandable.
You can see
that
but good job he like did in a way, because he's clearly putting the pieces of the puzzle together.
Well, it's the thing. So at this moment in time, all they know is that the link between three people, and I don't know if they even know anything about the other deaths.
No,
but Richard told Phil all about Mary's tragic death, and he mentioned that she had taken some Tylenol that day. And so Phil relayed this to Kramer, and it hit him. But to be sure, Kramer called the fire department who had treated Mary and inquired, were her pupils fixed and dilated? Her breathing shallow? Were all symptoms resistant to all tried medical interventions? The answer to all three questions was yes. Kramer called the hospital and told them what Nurse Jensen had already stated. It must be the Tylenol. Next, this was relayed to Dr. Kim, but he was confused. The Janus' presentations didn't fit with a Tylenol overdose, and I'm going to turn into such a nurse right now.
Do it.
I don't know if I've also mentioned in this episode, but I'm actually a nurse.
I wish we had video, because you're currently in your nursing.
Yeah, because I'll go straight to work after this episode, so I'm literally sat in my uniform. So, I've looked after people who have taken paracetamol overdoses.
Okay.
And this is a little trigger warning for anyone who doesn't want to hear about an overdose, but I'm not being graphic or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I've looked after people who have taken paracetamol overdoses, and a lot of the time they actually don't present unwell. They come in because they either realise they've done it unintentionally, because they kind of count up what they've done, or in relaying to someone how much pain relief they've taken because they're in so much pain, someone's like, that's too much paracetamol.
Yeah.
Or they come in because they've sadly done it deliberately.
Yeah.
But if someone does come in with symptoms, they tend to feel like nauseous, maybe they vomit, they have abdominal pain, and in extreme overdoses, their skin and the whites of their eyes may become a bit yellow because they're jaundice.
Mm.
So a little PSA, obviously don't ever take overdoses on anything, and please not intentionally, please reach out to someone. But please never take more than 1 gram of paracetamol in a 4-hour period, and no more than 4 gram in 24 hours, And I say this because the amount of people who have come in and they're like, I took 3 paracetamols because the pain was really bad. Or I always take 3 paracetamols. Or, well, I took 2 and then I didn't feel better. So
two hours
later, I took another 2. People think that because paracetamol is so common and such a bread and butter drug, like we said earlier, that it's really safe. And it is really safe if taken as you should.
Yeah.
It's actually really horrible, first of all, to overdose on, especially if you were to not survive that, because it's extremely painful. But also it really damages your liver and can do a real number on it. So, little PSA, please don't ever take an overdose of anything. Paracetamol, never take 3 because your pain is so bad. If you're needing more pain relief, the next step is ibuprofen if you're able to take it. Obviously, you can go up from there to cocodamol, which also contains paracetamol, so don't take them together. And if not, clearly your pain isn't managed, you need to speak to a healthcare professional.
Yeah.
Be that pharmacist, GP, obviously, someone. In extreme cases. Yeah, 1-1.
Yeah.
In the UK, in extreme cases, A&E is always there, but just don't be taking loads of paracetamol.
There's a reason that you're only allowed to buy 1 packet in stores. Like, don't get annoyed at shops for doing that. That is the law.
It's 2 packets.
Oh, is it 2 packets? Or it's, yeah. Like, you can buy cold and flu and then paracetamol and then, like, that's the maximum kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like,
I tried recently to buy 2 packets of paracetamol and cold and flu just because I, like, forgot.
Yeah.
And they were like, no. And I was like, and in my head, I was just like.
Oh. But it's not their fault. Don't get mad at them.
So, yeah. Always follow the instructions on packaging. They are there for a reason. Sorry, that's my nurse bit. I just have to say it. But I've seen intentional and unintentional paracetamol overdose a lot. And I just want everyone listening to be safe and to look after themselves. But back to the case. The Janus family definitely did not present as usual Tylenol overdoses, as you know now.
Yeah.
In fact, they'd all fallen into respiratory distress, meaning that their breathing was severely compromised. This had then subsequently led to 2 fatal cardiac arrests, and Dr. Kim still had Terry on life support. So what had they ingested? Dr. Kim spoke to several toxicologists and pored through textbooks. Eventually, he came to one conclusion. He could only think of one substance that killed people so quickly, almost immediately after ingestion. And that substance was cyanide.
Oh, wow.
And that is where we're going to leave it this week. And next week, we'll discuss what happened afterwards.
Yeah.
And I know this sounds like a really short case to leave it there.
But
honestly,
it will be like 2 hours if we did the whole thing. Yeah.
So I will leave you on that bombshell of have the Januses and all the other victims consume cyanide.
Wow.
And if so, how?
That is not what I expected you to say. Like,
no?
No. I mean, not that I know what cyanide poisoning does to you, but, you know, you always think, like, even someone who's not medical, like, even before I got into healthcare, like, obviously I work in hospital, but I don't really do anything medical. I'm very much MSK. But you would not, like, cyanide, you know, is a very fatal, poisonous substance.
Yeah, there's no real going back from cyanide.
Yeah.
But yeah, we will cover it all in full detail next week. What happens after then, and actually the developments that have happened in the case in the last few years.
Oh, wow. Oh, very interesting. I very much look forward to it.
And I wonder if you could see now why this case scares me so much.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like the things that are the scariest are the things that are so mundane that you would feel safe.
And also completely accidental, I'm assuming. Or is that what you're going to get into?
We will get into it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, something that should make you better.
Yeah.
Like paracetamol actually ends up killing you because it's cyanide. I mean,
it is so mundane. I took 2 paracetamols at the end of my night shift this morning, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I felt a little bit like hot and cold and a bit like...
I mean, Aiden's really ill at the minute, so he's taking regular cold and flu, like the 4 times in the night ones.
Yeah. And like, you know, you just gave your less than 2-year-old daughter paracetamol.
Oh my God, yeah.
obviously not a gram, but
no, just but that's
how
syringe.
Safe and how normal it is.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
these people thought that they were doing the same.
Yeah, especially like a 12-year-old as well. Like, would you give a 12-year-old
oh, I know.
Something that you didn't think was safe? No,
exactly. Like, mm-hmm. But yeah. We will get into all the reasons and everything.
All the nooks and crannies.
So.
Right.
Yes. So next week is another true crime episode, and then after that we will have 2 weeks of ghosty episodes.
Yes.
To make Jess, you know, earn her keep.
Yeah, I'm here for a reason, I promise. I'm not just here for the stories, the true crime stories to be read to me.
But yeah, other than that, everyone, of course, we hope your January is going okay. It's the longest month ever, despite
it is.
You know, everyone says it's 31 days, but we know it's a lie.
Yeah, it feels like 60 days, so.
Honestly.
Yeah.
So stay safe, stay warm, and of course, stay spooky. Hey guys, if you have a ghost story or a case suggestion, please email us, truecrimecovenpod@gmail.com.
You can also find us on Twitter at True Crime Coven or on Instagram and Facebook where we are at True Crime Coven Pod.
Also, it would mean the absolute world to us if you could rate us wherever you're listening to this right now, be it Spotify, Apple Music, or if you're on YouTube, give us a little thumbs up, click that bell, get notifications every time we post.
Subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts from.
Make these two witches smile.
Thanks, witches.
Sorry, Simon.